Hello everyone and welcome back. Today is Friday, April 10th, 2015. My name is Angela Walton-Rajley and this is the African Roots Podcast. Remember, you can always reach me at africanrootspodcast@gmail.com. Well everyone, how are you? Yes, it is the 10th of April. Yes, and this month, in case you're not aware, is a very significant month. And, you know, just as we try to construct our family histories, especially those who are researching persons of African ancestry, whether they had been enslaved or were free people of color, you know what? We really need to incorporate things that happened 150 years ago, this month, this week, in fact, into the family history. Even if your people had not been enslaved, April 1865 was significant, particularly because so many free people of color were part of the Union Army, were part of certainly the battle for freedom for all people. And many who were part of the United States colored troops, whether they were in the regular army coming out of New England, the 54th, 55th Massachusetts colored, or the 29th Connecticut, or were they part of the almost 200,000 United States colored troops? Yes, there's a lot to celebrate this month. And even other places, you have places like Louisiana, the Louisiana Native Guards, mostly free people of color who comprised those units that were later redesignated as U.S. colored troops, and just a little bit to the north and slightly to the west in Indian Territory, you had individuals from Cherokee and Creek nations who had gone up to Kansas with the Papaleahola, some of whom had joined the 1st and 2nd Kansas Colored, later redesignated as the 79th and 83rd U.S. Colored Infantries. In addition to that, you also had certainly dozens of people who had also gone into Kansas at the same time and became part of the 1st and 2nd Indian Home Guards. So we have a very, very rich Civil War history. We have a very, very rich legacy. And again, we've got to incorporate this part of the story. 150 years ago, so many things happened. We already know that, 154 years ago, it was the month of April when the first shots were fired at Fort Sumter. But this week, I don't know if you realize the significance of yesterday. Yesterday was the 9th, and yesterday was also the 150th anniversary of the surrender of Robert E. Lee to Ulysses S. Grant at the village of Appomattox Courthouse in Virginia. You know, it's absolutely a part of our history. Sometimes because of maybe a bit of discomfort that we have with history, with Civil War, with having ancestors who were enslaved, we don't pay attention, perhaps, as much as we could and as much as we should to really the impact of things that were really taking place in the lives of our ancestors, whose lives were directly impacted by things that happened 150 years ago this week. And in addition to that, individuals whose lives, well, let's put it this way, the trajectory of their life was altered forever. Now, does it mean that everybody was happy singing around, sitting around a campfire singing Kumbaya? No. This was the beginning of a new direction of their lives, but it would still be painful. Keep in mind, many people who had had a free labor force for hundreds of years certainly were not going to give it up very, very easily. The Freedmen's Bureau that was then established, there were all kinds of acts of violence that were directed towards newly freed people. They had to work through this. They had to live through this. But this week, 150 years ago, they really had a difference in their lives. And we need to incorporate that story. And there are other things that are going on, but we as genealogists just can't just go for the next name. Or as soon as we find that person in 1870, okay, what was his mama's name? What was his daddy's name? No. Let's pause and tell that story. It's absolutely something that we should consider. Now, in light of all that, I want to point out an event that's taking place today. It's taking place, actually, in conjunction with part of what happened in Virginia. It's very, very interesting story, and it's coming out of Appomattox, Virginia. Now, there is a funeral that's being held today, and it's a different kind of a story, and we have to thank a genealogist for bringing this story forward. Well, it's the story of Hannah Reynolds, and Hannah Reynolds was woman enslaved, as were millions of people, and apparently at the Battle of Appomattox Courthouse, when Robert E. Lee finally surrendered to Grant, she, Hannah, was the only non-military person, the only civilian said to have died as a result of that confrontation. Well, it's said that when, I guess, the house where her master had lived and she was there, that the house had been attacked, a cannonball went through the house, and she was injured. And it said that, of course, she died never having a chance to breathe freedom, to even understand what was really taking place. Well, what's interesting is that this evening, there's actually going to be a funeral service for her. And there will be a symbolic wooden coffin for her. But there's a reason for this, and this is where a genealogist comes into play. Alfred Jones apparently is a researcher, and he was very, very interested in just doing a little bit of research about individuals from that area, and he found some significant information. It has been, now this man is also a pastor, but he's, he's a researcher, like all of us are. And he learned something about Hannah Reynolds. It was always said, yes, she was struck by, the fire that had attacked, or, the assault that had taken place on the house. Well, he found some information about Hannah. It was said that she was killed, and that was just sort of it. But he found a little bit of information that pointed out that she actually did not die immediately when the house had been attacked. She lived for at least 3 days. She was still in and out of consciousness, but the fact is that she did not die immediately, so she died actually 3 days later. And the information that he found was that, wow, she did live to at least be free. She did, as it said, that her husband was by her side, and as were others. And so she would come in and out of consciousness. So she actually learned that not only had the war ended, but that she was now free. And so it's very, very interesting. He found some information, actually, when he was doing some research in a library in Lynchburg, Virginia, and he realized, oh my goodness, very interesting, because also her slaveholder, who was a Dr. Coleman, actually indicated in another document this gentleman found that he identified himself as a former owner. Indeed, this woman, who had lived most of her life, she was about 60 years old, she came in and out of consciousness and actually learned that she would at least pass away as a free woman. Well, the significance of this is that, number one, a detail or two additional is learned about her, but significant. But the fact is that, thanks to genealogical research of Pastor Jones, that, she did die free. And people were so fascinated by this little piece of information. They're going to actually have a funeral service for her today, well, later this afternoon, early evening. And it's going to be at Appomattox, and the eulogy will be delivered over a plain coffin made out of wood. And apparently it's going to be quite an event. I'm hoping to be able to find something in the press maybe tomorrow or in the next few days about it. There's going to be 100 member voice choir that will be singing, and 4,600 candles are going to be lit to represent the people who were enslaved in Appomattox County. These are people who were directly impacted by the surrender in Appomattox. And it sounds like it's going to be a moving event, but I'm really happy to share this information because it should be one of these kinds of things that every community should be aware of. And if nothing else, we want to know, well, how did the, how did the end of the war come to the knowledge of our own ancestors? How did they find out that their status had changed? How did they find out that, yes, this was the beginning of a new experience? Not always going to be a smooth one. We know that, and we know that even today. But as we tell that story, how can we dare eliminate this part of the story? Anyway, I'm happy to share that with you. I was so happy to see this story yesterday and just feel that it was one that's just really significant and needed to be told. By the way, I had just mentioned the part about the U.S. colored troops. Well, I want to remind you that coming up, there is going to be a presentation on actually a webinar, and if you catch it live, you can catch it free by FamilyTreeWebinars.com, and this is a chance to learn from Bernice Bennett a bit of information about really the experiences of not only former slaves, but also their descendants that you can pick up through the pension files of United States Colored Troops. And this is a webinar, as I said, it's going to be given. It's coming up on the 24th, not too far away, not next week, but the week after, from 2 to 3 p.m. on Friday the 24th. You really want to tune into that. I am going to put a link for you there on the podcast website. Again, you know, April is significant. This is something that is so very, very important. Where is your freedom story? Were your ancestors or their associates part of the battle for freedom? And afterwards, how did they fare? If you have an ancestor who was a soldier in the Civil War, or if you know that Civil War soldiers came from your community, even if your own ancestor was not a soldier, I still hope you're going to pull pension files of people who were soldiers. Number one, you might be surprised. Your ancestors may be in those files as witnesses. So all of this is so very, very significant that I do hope that you'll start to really undertake this kind of research. So very, very important. Civil War research, oh wow, it's just, well, you know, I am biased, I have to admit. Yes, I do have several ancestors who served, excuse me, in different units from Indian Territory to Mississippi to Tennessee. So yes, I do have a strong interest, but it's what I think that's, extends beyond just my ancestors. It's not just my Uncle Cephas or Uncle Braxton or great-grandfather Barry or others. These are stories that we really need to try to incorporate into the family narrative. And I really hope that people will take it seriously and will pursue it. And it does not have to be your direct ancestor, but then study the community's history, because you're still going to learn what happened to others in the area. And it's just really, really, really something that should be a part of the process anyway. Oh, by the way, going to a different subject, how many of you were able to find the story or were able to follow the story that came out? Actually, this came out of St. Louis. This was an interesting story, and even though it's not genealogical, it's kind of a well, sort of an adoption story, but it's the story of a woman who was reunited with her daughter after 50 years. And this is a woman who never gave up her child. She and her husband had a child, and they were told at the time, after the woman gave birth a few hours, that the infant had died. And it's one of those things that kind of boggles the mind that a woman, after being given birth, was not given her child. And so this woman has proceeded, gone on with life. She and her husband had additional children later in life. But then to find out 50 years later that the young lady, well, the young lady, her daughter is alive and well, is a mature woman, 50 years old, and had been adopted by another family. And how very, very strange, particularly because there was an adoption, one wonders, well, gee, how did that exactly happen? Was it a situation where someone had, you know, switched a child at birth? Who knows? The part of that story, I guess, may never be known. But it was still a very, very touching story. The woman's children, the lady who was born, the infant, now an adult, who has grown children, assisted her in the quest to find her mother. And guess what? They found it through, I guess, not only just good research, I would love to hear more stories about that process, but also through DNA. They identified a person, and then a DNA test was conducted. And yes, turns out that her mother was alive and well, her birth mother, and yes, and the birth daughter was alive and well also. And part of the story was captured. There are two videos that one can watch. One was the daughter who was born 50 years ago when she learned that her mother was still alive. And then there's the other story of the woman who had been told that her daughter had died. And so there's a little video of when they finally met. The first video is when the daughter was informed that, you know, her birth mother was still alive. And I'll put the video there for you. The young lady born 50 years ago lost her hearing at the age of 3, but communicates well. She can vocalize a bit, and but she communicates, obviously, through American Sign Language, and her children, who also speak to her through sign language, you know, were able to let the story unfold. And they videoed there from their end, and there is a video of the meeting as well in terms of the mother and daughter when they met. But yeah, it's one of those stories that it warms the heart. But we all know there's another story in that background. You know, how can that happen? And you know, what was the situation or the circumstance of an adoption per se? How did a healthy baby born to a parent willing to receive that child, anxious parents, then suddenly be switched and, or suddenly be told, how can his mother be told that the child was deceased? Anyway, a lot of questions to that. We know that story will probably unfold for many years, I can only imagine. And of course, now I think there's almost another sub-story that may eventually emerge. We like to read. I know I belong to a group on Facebook where people help adoptees connect with their families. There's sort of, I think, I won't call it a secondary story, but I guess a story that in a future years will probably unfold. What happens after the quote-unquote happy reunion when all of those other issues are explored? The what ifs. What if my life had been different? What if the life of the adopted child, but also what of the life of the parents had they had their children with them instead of following whatever path they took at that time? But fascinating story nevertheless, and many of us know people from our own either families or communities who were raised by others, whether it was a formal adoption or not, and then later maybe that person met a birth parent or was able to connect. How does it go after that happy meeting? So it's really one of those fascinating things to give some consideration to. I wanted to mention that for me, of late, I have been just really embarking on an interesting effort to catch up and to organize my own reading. And yes, I'm still journaling like crazy, but part of that is involving my own more systemized approach to my reading. And one of the things that I have to say that has inspired me, and I try once a year to pull out a book, and this is a book that I hope that many of you have in your libraries. It's not in print, but there's still a lot of copies that are out there in the larger world that you can get used copies. You can get copies from used book dealers. And it's called, and it's for me, I think, a book of inspiration more than anything. And I'm referring to the book by Dorothy Sproul Redford, A Somerset Homecoming. It's a journey of a woman who, yes, expressed some curiosity about her own family history after she and her mother had experienced watching the televised miniseries Reboot. This is back in the 70s. So her journey began in the 1970s. And after watching Roots, they just began to just discuss things, and she began to chat with her mother, where are our folks from? And there she was down in Virginia, where she had grown up, but only our family, they came from in Bertie County, northeastern part of North Carolina. And she would hear little things, little snippets about the family history. Well, the book itself chronicles her journey as she began to look through the records. And of course, it also not only chronicles that, but for me, it also chronicles a journey that she took in learning about herself. You see her as a young woman. She talks about her life, her childhood, going to New York, her aunt and uncle who would sometimes come down, Aunt Dot, and how going to New York, she realized her own relatives had sort of forged a different identity for themselves. In New York, they were not a black couple from the South or from Virginia. They kind of transformed themselves and declared that they were West Indian. And wow, that's very powerful, because they were trying to almost distance themselves from maybe the stigma of being Southerners, of being black Southerners. And so they had embraced this false identity to the neighbors of being West Indian, of somehow, no, we are not Southern black people or Southern Negroes, so to speak. And that book always strikes me so very, very strongly. It's one that I think you see her as a young woman as she's trying to explore not just who the ancestors were, but also who they were. You see her as a young woman in New York, and suddenly she wanted to connect with the African, and how she puts on something and feels that, okay, I'm looking more like an African immigrant to America, yet she meets someone who was from Africa, who begins to speak to her in their native tongue, and then she feels, oh my God, I've been sort of exposed as not being authentic. So it's partly a journey into the self, a journey into one's own identity. And then comes the part in the book when she makes the discovery of finding the actual homestead where the ancestors had lived. And that part of the book almost just strikes me of that feeling that one gets as they sometimes visit that territory for the first time. I know for me, I had that feeling at least two times, maybe three, when I visited for the first time the community where some of my ancestors had lived. I remember visiting a community in Southwest Arkansas where my grandmother had grown up, and going to that town the first time, just emotional sadness. Although she lived, I mean, my grandmother was born in the 1880s. She was not enslaved, but I knew that her parents had been. So I knew not only was I visiting her hometown, her home community, but I was still visiting an area where someone from whom I come had been enslaved. And I remember the whole wave of sadness that had hit me, but almost kind of wonder that, oh my gosh, okay, they were here. They endured and raised their children, raised their families there. But I still felt this incredible, just an emotional wave. And when I read the book, Somerset Homecoming, of which I'm speaking, when she first visited Somerset Plantation, and wow, when you first make that step there, there's almost something without words that doesn't describe it fully well. And it's one of those things that, oh, okay, this is very real. And I grew up also on the border of Oklahoma, so we went to Oklahoma all the time. I did not know almost many times we went to Oklahoma that I was entering a community where ancestors had been enslaved, because my great-grandmother, Sally, whom I knew and loved, she was, you know, alive until 1961. I found out, 30 years after her death, that she was born in the middle of the Civil War, but she was also born enslaved. Wow. I never knew that of all the hundreds and hundreds of times I visited Oklahoma. So the Oklahoma experience was a bit different, but once I learned that, almost every time I go to Oklahoma, even today, I know that I'm entering really sort of an area that, here's that untold story, that unknown chapter of slavery and the territory that's there. And where were my ancestors, and how did they fare? And I continue to research and tell that story, and it's one that still has to unfold, but I realize, oh my gosh, that emotional feeling that I get. And another time was when a good friend had taken me to the Drennan home for the first time in Van Buren, Arkansas, and knowing that my ancestors had lived there. And, oh my gosh, my great-great-grandfather Patrick was a slave of John Drennan, and, oh, wow, his life was right there in Drennan, Missouri. So, yeah, I understood that. Well, I really encourage you to read the book Somerset Homecoming if you haven't read it, and, you know, reread it if you have read it, but reread it not just for the story of what happened, the memoir, but reread it for that part of the story, that story of revelation, that story of discovery of the history, number one, but that also that emotional connection to walking upon the soil, and to a greater extent, maybe that journey of sometimes how we perceive ourselves. Strong book. I recommend that you add it to your library and maybe use some of her methodology in telling your personal story. Well, oh my goodness, I'm looking at the time, but I do want to tell friends in Arkansas, I hope to see some of you next weekend. I'll be speaking at the Arkansas Civil War Commission Sesquicentennial Celebration, Let Freedom Ring. And it's something that, again, please appreciate April for what it is. It's not just springtime, but it's a season of, yes, the beginning of freedom for our ancestors. You know, mark this, celebrate this, tell that story. What is your ancestors' freedom story? On that note, I'm going to wind things down. I see I've been going almost a full half an hour. I do appreciate you for being there. You know I do. Without you, I wouldn't be making these podcasts. Anyway, thank you, thank you, thank you for sharing some of your stories this week. And, you know, I hope that you will. In the meantime, certainly think about finding your own ancestral story of freedom. And let's talk about this a whole lot more. This is such an important year for all of us. Anyway, I'm going to wind it down again. And I will be doing some things. I'll be coming to you next week from the banks of the Arkansas River, Little Rock, Arkansas. That's right in the heart of the Arkansas River Valley. And looking forward to seeing many of you there. In the meantime, have a wonderful week. Have a wonderful week of researching. And yes, of course, I hope that you will continue to keep researching, keep documenting, and yes, always keep sharing what you find. Have a great week, everyone. Be well and be safe. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.